everyone. Welcome to Rewatchable episode 69. We're back this week with Natalie hosting to get us back on track with our little host rotation situation. And we're doing episodes 7 and 8, which is the two-part Winter Solstice episode of Avatar The Last Airbender. And joining me this week are Ariana and Mitch. So hello to both of you.
Hi.
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 How are you? Everyone good?
We're moving, both of us.
Oh, so. Wow. And this is Mitch's first recap episode, I think?
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, it's your first one in the series so far. So Mitch is a super fan, in case you guys don't remember, and Ariana is a newbie. So hopefully, and I'm a super fan as well as your host, so hopefully this will go nicely. The contact info, if you ever want to reach us on the podcast, is rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com if you want to send in any theories or feedback. Twitter is re_watchable, or you can comment on this post on Hyperball, and one of the hosts or contributors to the podcast will be sure to check that out as well. So the first episode, episode 7 of season 1, is The Winter Solstice Part 1, The Spirit World. To give a quick synopsis, in this chapter, Aang and the gang fly into a burnt-down forest where they find a village that's been haunted by a creepy alien spirit. Aang kills the alien with kindness to reveal a giant panda that is just sad his forest burnt down. Hashtag save the whales. Also, as the winter solstice approaches, Aang takes a walk into the spirit world and finds out he has to talk to Avatar Roku to get the answers to realizing himself as an avatar. Meanwhile, Zuko is throwing another temper tantrum and Uncle is chilling as he takes a naked bath, but then everything changes when the Earthbenders attack. They capture Uncle Iroh, but fail to realize he's a BAMF and can totally escape while naked and chained. So that's the synopsis of this episode. Very nicely put, Ariana. And we will go, I guess, quickly into some discussion points for this episode and people's thoughts. The first thing, I guess, to ask you guys is, with Zuko's storyline, were you kind of cheering for him the first time around, even though he is the bad guy?
No, nowhere near. I didn't like Zuko in the beginning at all, and it's kind of sad that we've assumed anyone listening knows that Zuko is one of those love to hate characters. Mm. I wouldn't necessarily say in a Draco Malfoy kind of way. He's in a different light, but it's very hard for me to see him as I originally did now. I can say that, you know, because
it's
there's a lot of stuff that's going to go on that'll make you feel different. But right now, he comes off as a one-sided villain who has just revenge in his eyes and lots of enemies that he wants to fight off, you know?
But that's why I think that this episode is interesting, Mitch, in this episode, even though you think he's a bad guy, well, I don't think he's a bad guy anymore because he's obviously Logan Eccles and in love with Aang. But
what? Veronica Mars.
You're going to have to explain this to me, but yeah, he is in love with Aang. But anyway, go on.
In this episode, the Earthbenders are the bad guys because they captured the uncle, and we like the uncle. He's funny and chill. So you're cheering for Zuko when he's rescuing the uncle. I thought I was.
Yeah.
I was like, come on.
I agree in that. I'm trying to remember how I felt about it the first time around. I don't quite remember, but I do think, I mean, if we're skipping ahead to our favorite scenes, I'll explain it a bit more then. But my favorite moment that I picked was where there's that very obvious, am I going to keep chasing the avatar or am I going to go save my dumb uncle? And he goes and saves his dumb uncle. And that was really, I think that was a turning point, if you know what I mean, or the first kind of turning point that you see with Zuko. And I find his overdramatics hilarious, and I'm pretty sure I did the first time around as well. So I was very pro Zuko in this episode. I can't remember really thinking he was flat out evil one note, if you know what I mean, but I don't know, it's been a long time since I first watched it. This time around I was just laughing basically because he's so ridiculous, but
well, it makes me wonder if his character development was almost like, you're gonna understand this more, Ariana, so sorry Natalie, but the Logan Eccles of Veronica Mars to Avatar, where they decide to bring a character that was not minor, but just more flat, and then round them up with really cool backstory and emotion and stuff.
Well,
so
there's, I mean, he, I think they did plan this out quite, they planned out the whole season when they wrote it. And so his development was in mind the whole time, as far as I know. Like, there's going to be a reveal in the next few episodes that I know was the turning point when the writers were putting together the characters. Basically, they were like, okay, so this guy's feeling a bit this, but oh my God, what if we made it this, if you know what I mean? And that reveal, I know, was, yeah, they didn't just get, they weren't already airing episodes and they got to that moment. That was planned before the entire show started. So I do think they had things in mind for him, but it'll be interesting to look in a bit more about that. So another issue, I guess, tying into the whole firebender portion of the episode was that we find out a little bit more about Iroh's backstory. You know, he was a badass. He was Dragon of the West. He was a conqueror and general and army leader. I mean, it was for the Fire Nation, so it was kind of evil. But what did you think about hearing that and, like, him communicating with the Earthbenders? Like, Ariana, what did you end up thinking about that?
I thought it was a little surprising to me because he comes off as such a, like, zen, chill guy. And the person that the Earthbenders were describing seemed like a very violent, typical Fire Nation person. So I wonder what he went through to make him kind of change.
Yeah. I mean, I love Iroh. I think that he's a great character and, yeah, definitely a big fan favorite. I remember sort of slightly being surprised at that, but I remember liking that he kind of admitted straight up. He was like, I acknowledge my defeat at Ba Sing Se. Like, he wasn't like prideful and, you know, horrid like, you know, Admiral Zhao and the various other Fire Nation leaders that we've seen so far. Mitch, what did you think about that Iroh reveal, if you know what I mean, as the kind of war leader?
Yeah, I'm with Ariana that it really doesn't make sense with even what we've seen of him so far. And in general, it doesn't make sense for what I know, because I think, Ariana, you're pretty spot on with your assumptions about Iroh just being like as calm and as chill as he is. So it is weird to see him, you know, be shown as like a war machine. Like, he's, it's kind of funny too, because he plays it off like it was his past self, and he's had kind of like reconciling where he's become a better person, because he even says, oh, I know, and we were just so hungry and tired, I had to leave. Like, he's been there and done that. He's over being a warlord.
Yeah. But then he obviously proves that he has a bit of that, you know, like, or at least that he's like smarter than everyone else on this show when he kind of, you know, throws himself off the thing and leaves the shoe for Zuko to find, and like he's still incredibly tactical and clever while also being super peaceful. Like, it's a bit Yoda, you know?
It is a bit Yoda. That's a really good way of putting it.
Yeah.
It's not exactly Dumbledore, because he does have a lot of that master plan going on, but he's more Yoda because he's more there just to give that sage advice in a really weird way that no one else understands.
Yeah. I really one of the points that I wanted to bring up, actually, that isn't one that you wrote down, Ariana, is I wanted to know what you guys think of the Earth Kingdom so far, like the Earth soldiers that you've seen, and how you feel like they act compared to, say, the Fire Nation or anyone else that we've seen. Because I just personally have never been a fan of the Earth people. There's individuals who we meet who are great, but their kind of army, and you'll see a lot more of their kind of lifestyle. I am not so pro Earth Kingdom. So what did you guys think of their handling of that, like the whole, we're gonna crush your hands with this rock and stuff like that?
You know, I Natalie, I think you're hitting it spot on with saying that the Earthbenders aren't all they're cracked up to be, because even the guy who like took, you know, Uncle Iroh under his wing to be like his he's the main general or whatever, he not only just looked evil, but he just kind of felt evil. He really felt like he wasn't the kind of person that came from someone that was, like, abused other lives and had not a lot of good stuff going on. He felt like more he was just in power for a long time and was poisoned by it, you know? He felt more Ozai to me, as we'll find out later.
Yeah,
so I think it gives you in the beginning, he gives you a pretty negative impression of all the Earthbenders, from that being one of the only times other than the prison camp that we saw of Earthbending, you know?
Yeah, Ariana, how are you feeling about Earthbenders so far?
I don't know. They're kind of, like, boring, I guess.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
We're going to see a lot more of them, obviously. We're going to see a lot more of all the elements, except airbending, because Aang really is the only one. But we... I don't know if that's a spoiler, but the show's called The Last Airbender, and it's not a lie. So, whatever. The Earthbenders we'll see a lot more of, but I don't know how to say this. Like, they are the most... I think they're the best example of the show in kind of that whole... like sort of conformity and regime even more than the Fire Nation, which is about all I'll say about that, but we'll definitely see more of that. I think that they're kind of, a lot of Earthbenders are kind of sheep, if that makes sense. They're a lot of the Earth Nation, they're kind of very, you know, but they've also had a lot of problems. They were the, you know, obviously invaded by the Fire Nation as well, so, you know, we'll get to that stuff.
Well, that makes sense because, yeah. I mean, I get that the Fire Nation is bad, but I do kind of find it endearing how, like, feisty they are.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. Fire is my element. Like, that's the one. I love the Fire Nation. Not that they're evil dictators, but, you know, the Fire Nation as a whole and firebending is my favorite. So, yeah. And I like that they're all overdramatic idiots, if you know what I mean. But skipping away from the fire people for now, Aang and the gang, they have this whole panda alien to deal with, in that this
panda alien for real,
this,
though, like
you know, this spirit comes and harasses this village and takes people into the spirit world. Aang sort of goes and figures out what the situation is and manages to realize, oh, you're just an angry panda spirit that's got sort of corrupted because the forest got burnt down, and he manages to kind of calm that situation by showing him an acorn. I'm like, yeah, it's going to take like 400 years to grow back, but whatever. What did you think of that whole situation, like hitting sort of on the path of, you know, ecology and pollution and that kind of situation? That's another theme that the show's introducing. They like to introduce a lot of, you know, issues, I guess, in not like in a Glee way, but like in a nice way.
And like a Miyazaki way.
Yeah. So, any thoughts on that, Ariana? Or
I don't know. I mean, I guess it's good. like I find it amusing how kind of heavy-handed these lessons come down, but it is a children's show, yeah. So I understand. It's like a good message. So let's protect our nature.
Yeah. I mean...
Well, it's funny that you say this is a children's show, because I often find myself struggling with what it might actually be. Oftentimes, even with a large retrospect that I have, mm-hmm. I do say to myself, it does come off as childish when Aang is like, that's a big puffy cloud, I'm going to jump in it. Oh, it's wet, I'm going to blast everyone with water. Those kind of skits come off as like humor that 10-year-olds would like. But then... when there are moments as intense as, like, Sokka was taken into the spirit world and Katara is crying alone and scared for her brother and, you know, love interest, boyfriend, best friend thing, that stuff really is a lot more intense than you expect in a kid's show, along with the fighting, too. So it's hard for me to identify, which I think is a common theme, too, for what the series and Korra are, because they fit in the middle. What you say, Natalie?
Yeah, I, on this particular rewatch, have kind of, there's been a lot of lines, like, that have felt really over-explaining to me. They have felt like kids' show dialogue, but I also know that it does sort of change over time, and Korra especially is, I think, more teen-based, so I don't know. I think that there are, you know, childish elements to it, but, yeah, sometimes it is a bit heavy-handed, you know, but at least it's being heavy-handed about the right kind of things, I suppose.
And it's worth sitting through the cloud-jumping moments.
Yeah.
There are a lot of really dramatic, emotional, like, family drama kind of stuff, and murder, deceit, even sometimes sleeping with the enemy and stuff. Like, there's a lot of cool stuff going on in that one.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Wait. Sleeping with the enemy?
Yeah. Oh,
is this about to get good?
Ariana? Yep. I'm not going to say anything more than this, but there is definitely implied sex scenes in this show. in later
seasons. Oh my gosh.
Seasons. That's all I'm going to say. Excited. Get ready for that. Get ready for that. It's not like, it's not super dodgy or anything, but it's hilarious.
Cartoons having sex.
Yeah.
Bum chick the bow.
Anyway, moving on from that, it was kind of the first look at the spirit world, like at, you know, Aang being in the spirit world and not realizing that he wasn't actually in his body and stuff like that, and learning a bit more about him being in that avatar state of glowing eyes and things like that. Did it sort of, the first time around, Mitch, or even for you, Ariana, did it kind of take you a while to work out what was going on? Like, what are you thinking of the spirit world so far?
Yeah, I was like, is he dead? What's going on? I think there's still 3 seasons left, so I was confused.
Yeah. This is an interesting impression of the spirit world, because my memories of it, I'd kind of forgotten what the spirit world was like, because, again, Korra, in the last season of Korra, dealt a lot with the spirit world in a different way, so my memory of it was kind of slightly skewed, and I didn't realize. I was like, why is he just walking around? Why isn't he in like another realm, like skipping around with like the spirits there? But it was more just the spirits coming into our world. I don't know. It was a bit strange. But in that state is how he is able to also learn more about his avatar history, I guess. So what did you guys think of that? Like, you know, he's going to have to go and talk to Avatar Roku, who was the avatar before him, who was the fire avatar of the cycle. What did you, you know, when you saw that kind of, you know, thing, did that make you think anything particular about what a fire avatar might be like? I mean, they can do everything, but the one that came out of the Fire Nation, Ariana?
Yeah.
I was excited because if he's came from the Fire Nation, then he must be kind of edgy and stuff. And he has a dragon, so, I mean, bonus points to him.
Yeah.
So I was excited.
Would you prefer to have a dragon than a flying water buffalo as your kind of spirit guide animal to ride on?
See, this is an internal debate I've been having. I'm not sure, because a dragon, I mean, how can you turn down a dragon? But the water buffalo is just so cuddly and cute. So it's like two sides, you know? Which one do you go with?
Mitch?
I don't know.
Mitch, would you rather a dragon or would you rather Appa?
I mean, the dragon's a lot more like badass, but Appa's a lot more cute and fluffy. I feel like you can get a good nap on him, and the dragon might like fall off flying on him, you know? You can't really saddle that thing. So.
Yeah, you probably have to really pay attention riding the dragon, even no matter how good your communication is with them. You probably can't just, like, lie on top of him and go to sleep while he takes you from point A to point B.
I mean, like, think of Aragorn, the series we've ever gotten into that.
Yeah, yeah.
He's talking about the scales cutting up his legs and stuff. And that does not sound comfortable. I don't want a dragon. And plus, Appa can still airbend, so essentially that's his own form of fire breathing, if you had to put it that way. And
yeah.
He gets around, you know?
That's actually a really interesting aspect, because I've always been curious about the water animal, because we will see some earth animals who can basically do the same equivalent, you know, how Appa can fly so he can kind of airbend, and the dragon can breathe fire and make fire. We'll see some animals that are kind of that kind of aspect for earth bending, but water we never see. And Korra, who's the next avatar in the current series, is a water bending. Her family's from the water tribe, and we still don't really get an answer for that with her. So I'm curious about what the water bending spirit animal is. So
she doesn't have like a spirit.
She does.
Animal.
She has a thing, a dog bear thing that she rides, which is in a lot of the pictures of her. But it doesn't seem to be related to waterbending in the way that, like, Appa is related to airbending, if you know what I mean, or, like, that the dragon can breathe fire. So I'm curious about that. So I don't know what the water animal would be. Maybe it would be, like, that giant fish thing that Aang rode in that.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of.
Yeah. The unagi.
No, Natalie, if I said a keyword to you that's not spoilery, you might catch it. Okay. There was a pregnancy. Do you know which I'm talking about? There's a monster in the water, and it's the drama of the episode is of a pregnancy.
I can't remember.
Baby Daddy.
No.
If you knew it, you would knew it. Like, if you knew it, you would know. When we get to it in that part of the show, we can question to see whether or not this might be that waterbedding creature.
Okay. Yeah, I can't Serpent's quite Pine. Remember what you're talking about, actually.
Serpent's Pass, actually. Serpent's Pass.
Far out. Mitch. Oh, hey, well, I remember the woman there. I remember the pregnancy in that Serpent's Pass. I don't remember the animal involved. Anyway, we'll get to it.
Once again, Ariana, this show is pretty adult to have like a birthing scene, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like almost.
Anyway, we'll get to it. So Sokka he comes back, and the other people who the panda sort of sucked into the spirit world out of spite, they come back too. We don't really hear about what they did while they were away or anything like that, but that could be, you know, something to, you know, look out for in future.
Pardon?
They didn't pee, apparently. That's what they did. But I guess, yeah, there's a cool little firebending fight at the end where Zuko rescues Iroh, and I really like watching, like, the firebending breakdancing stuff, so that's, like, fun.
And the way that Uncle takes that boulder coming toward him,
yeah,
and swings it around with his chain is pretty epic.
Yeah. So yeah, I guess just let's talk about our particular favorite scenes from a particular, you know, the scenes and quotes that we liked the most from this episode. So Ariana, what was your favorite one-off scene from this?
Well, I don't know if it was my favorite, but it's the one I found the most amusing. And it's when they were capturing Uncle,
mm-hmm.
and he was naked in the bath, so they drain all the water out, right? And
yeah.
they have, like, this awkwardly placed earth stuff everywhere. And just, like, the angles I thought were so funny. So I liked that.
Yeah. Oh, the bath was, yeah. Iroh knows how to live, but, yeah, I love that.
Yeah, he
does. Yeah. My favorite, as I mentioned earlier, was when, you know, Zuko goes back and he, you know, has to choose between saving Iroh and chasing Aang. And he's like, I'm just going to go and save Iroh and whatever. Like, he's so troubled about what he's doing and he's so angry all of the time. But it's a very teen angst and I never don't find it amusing, basically. So I like that he made that choice and that he comes in and sort of, yeah, fights the Earthbenders, who, as I said, I don't really like the Earthbenders very much on a whole, so, so yeah.
But we will have a redeeming Earthbending character, which we will not talk about.
Oh, there's plenty of good one-on-one Earthbenders. There's plenty
but
of
there
good...
is but... the Earthbending character.
Oh, yes. There is the Earthbending character. That's true. But
yes.
There's... Even that Earthbending character has moments of... Well... They're very rock-like. They're very stubborn. They're very thick sometimes. They're rock-like. And so, but on the and there are plenty of one-on-one Earth Nation people that we meet and like. On a whole, not a big fan of the Earth Kingdom. But Mitch, what was your favorite moment from the show?
Mine was when it was revealed that this giant alien monster is actually a panda.
A sad panda. Yeah.
Right, sad panda. I liked it, honestly, for two things. It's storytelling potential. That moment showed a lot because it was like a pained scream, not just a terrifying roar. Mm. And then also, I liked it animation-wise, and I guess mixed with the sound, too. It worked really well. It looked like that was, if you were to film that happening in real life, that's what it would look like.
Yeah.
It was just really, really gorgeous. And there are a lot of moments in especially the earlier Atla episodes that I really can't get over how much work they might have taken to just layer these different cells and
do a 3D
camera.
Yeah,
and
there's a lot of 3D animation for like a visually 2D show. Even in the opening credits, I always notice it. And yeah, it is very well put together, actually.
Which it fits the theme of... the influences that Miyazaki movies have had on Atla and Korra, because the first movie I know that had any 3D elements in it, it was done kind of well, I guess, for the time, wasn't it Princess Mononoke?
Mm-hmm.
And the 3D in this whole entire series reminds me a lot of that movie's 3D effects with, like, the goo monsters that are on, you know what I mean? Like, that kind of stuff. Like, yeah, so... If you guys really, if you like Atla, there's no reason that you wouldn't like Mononoke whatsoever, because it's basically all about Earth spirits and stuff. So it's a pretty similar series. So that's where I was coming from, long-wittedly, from that cool panda monster moment.
Cool. Quotes, quickly, before we move on to episode 8 with Avatar Roku. So, Mitch, what was your favorite quote from this?
Mine was the last zinger in the end with Zuko going to his uncle. Now, would you please put on some clothes?
Oh, Zuko.
He was naked for a long time this episode.
Yes, yeah.
And he was kind of okay with it.
Mine was Zuko, again, right at the beginning, also being completely ridiculous when... I mean, it's another I don't want any calming tea moment, but it's Iroh's always encouraging Zuko to just chill, kid, just chill. And he was like, come and have a nice jacuzzi with me in this rock. And he was like, my troubles cannot be soaked away. And I'm like, Zuko, I'm going to tell you right now, they probably can. You need to just relax. But I just love his. Like, oh my god, he's such a teen. Everything is such a big deal, and he's such a teen, and I love it. How about you, Ariana?
I loved the end when the Earth guy, he's like, thank you, Avatar. If only there was a way to repay you for what you've done. And Sokka, right away, he's like, well, you could give us some supplies and some money. And Katara is, like, so offended that he would suggest that. And he's like, what? We need stuff. And so, thank you, Sokka. He's keeping it real. They do need stuff.
They do. How are you guys feeling about the Katara-Sokka-Aang balance at the moment in terms of...
Oh, you mean how they're Harry, Ron, and Hermione?
Kind of. I mean, there is that as well, but, you know, that could get a bit incesty, given the Ron, Hermione endgame. But
Guys, I'm not trying to insinuate like a Lannister thing here. I definitely mean like Sorcerer's Stone, Harry, Ron, Hermione.
Fair enough. Yes, I think that's pretty accurate. But I mean, not that I dislike Ron at all. And we have had this discussion on my first episode as well. I think Sokka has a lot more facets at this point than Ron had at that point in his journey. If you know what I mean, he has the joke stuff and. But he's also, like, his kind of turnaround in that episode with Suki in the Kyoshi Island is also just really, like, character development straight off the bat. So Sokka is one of my favorites at this point in the show, for sure. But
and it's good he had that, because it was very hard to pick Sokka before he stopped hating on women as much as he was and started being proactive about learning about other cultures and...
Yeah.
Ideas and stuff. He before was just such a closed off individual.
It's just
been a pleasant to like watch him.
Yeah, I think it's just an example of people being really like just really uneducated, like that people can have ideas that just come from lack of exposure and that they don't really mean them, and it's not reflective of their heart and their potential, if you know what I mean. And that is something that's tackled pretty quickly with him, which was nice. But
that's a really great point, Natalie, because I think that is how most people who like say these ignorant things are. They're not bad people. They're just ignorant people. Like they haven't been exposed to like what you're talking about.
Yeah. But we will carry on to episode 8, which is the second part. This is a two part, like right off the bat, two parts of one whole story episode of the Winter Solstice, Avatar Roku. So in this chapter, Aang takes off to the Fire Nation to talk to Avatar Roku before the Winter Solstice ends. He and his friends get captured by the Fire Nature, but then everything changes when Avatar Roku attacks. Avatar Roku saves the day and tells Aang he has to collect the Water, Earth, and Fire Horcruxes. Oh my god. before he can defeat Voldemort at the end of the summer.
Oh wow, that's perfect, actually.
Yeah, basically, I mean, for anyone, I don't think anyone's listening to this show that hasn't, you know, watched, that hasn't read Harry Potter, but if you're watching this as a newbie to Avatar, what that's meant to mean is that he needs to master all four elements that he hasn't already got as a bender of all four elements in order to take down the Fire Lord at the end of the summer, because the Fire Lord plans to use the power from a comet to have extra power and basically burn the whole world down or whatever. So that's pretty intense. The first question that I have to ask is, how cute is Appa, you guys?
adorable.
He was so precious. He's when, like Aang wants to leave, and he's like, dude, we're not leaving without my friends.
Yeah, he's like, Appa says bring Katara. No. Appa says no. He's very sweet. And then we get the return of Captain Zhao, who is awful, and we don't like him. No one likes him, right?
No, but he was a good villain in the M. Night Shyamalan movie.
What? In the... Oh, I have not seen...
Was he in that movie?
I don't... Mitch, yeah. There's... No. No, we're not even... No. I'm just...
I, like, blocked everything Zuko, from that movie.
He and Zuko had, like, the best plot in that movie whatsoever. There's no one else that had anything decent. But, like...
I remember there was a princess who turned into a star or something.
Oh,
yeah,
no!
Hang on to it, Ariana. Just put a pin in that.
That's a lot more watered down than... Oh, my God.
Just put a pin in that. We'll come back. Do. We'll revisit. But Zuko's interactions with Zhao are interesting to me. I thought he's always so hung up, you may have picked up so far, on his honor and having his honor. And we get a real kind of feel from Admiral Zhao, or Captain Zhao, whatever his name is at this point, that Zuko, he was really banished. I mean, we know that he's, you know, banished, but he's really hammering at home. And, you know, it sort of sounds like sounds like Zuko is giving his father, the Fire Lord, too much credit in terms of, you know, coming home and stuff like that, because Zuko is about to enter Fire Nation waters for the first time when he's banished. So what did it make you think, either Mitch the first time or Ariana, this is your first time, if the Fire Nation is evil and Zuko's dad is the Fire Lord and Zuko's dad hates Zuko, what does that make you think?
Well, we're talking about the relationship of two brothers and then the nephew, Zuko, correct?
Well, yeah, we're talking about, you know, if the Fire Nation as a whole is doing all these horrible things and the Fire Lord, who's Zuko's father, is in charge of that all, and the Fire Lord has banished Zuko from the Fire Nation, what does that make you think about Zuko's position, like what he might have done or anything like that?
I have no idea what he could have done, because, like, at this point, I think that Zuko, like, he's for evil. Like, he's willing to do bad stuff. And that seems like something his dad would like, so I don't know, like, what he could have done. He must have done something nice to somebody, like, I don't know.
Which, Natalie, here it starts to really feel a lot like Draco. If you analyze it from an outside perspective, you just say, father...
But Draco's dad liked him.
Yeah, he did, but I guess I cued into that when you said that Zuko's for evil and so is his father. That parallel was to be pretty strong between Draco and Lucius. And I think it's funny, too, because wasn't Lucius one of the voices, the actor for Lucius?
Yeah, he was.
Oh, yeah.
He is Zhao.
Oh, okay, so that's kind of funny,
that's
too.
Jason Isaacs.
Interesting.
But I think it's a totally different dynamic because... Zuko is on his own and he's like trying to redeem himself. But I can't figure out what he must have. I don't know. What could he have done that was so bad that his dad would hate him?
Well, and you know what's funny, Natalie? I actually can't remember the actual moment of like what Zuko did. I remember a certain scenes of things happening that relate to Star Wars, people say sometimes. But I don't remember the exact moment. So it's funny. I wish I could even hypothetically answer your question in my head, Ariana. But that's just some big detail that's missing. I don't know why. It shouldn't be. I think it might have been – maybe I can't spoil you by even trying to guess because I might be right.
Yeah. We'll definitely return to that. Aang goes to the Roku's Island with the volcano and the fire temple, the fire sages – and he's expecting a welcome from them, which gives you an impression of how the Fire Nation was before this war. Because, you know, the Avatar, the past Avatar was fire. All the nations lived in harmony, just like the credits say. So Aang used to have friends in the Fire Nation and stuff like that. So they weren't always all bad. But he's expecting, you know, help from those Fire Sages. But the Fire Sages do not like him and are not pro-Avatar anymore.
Where is Aang's Bumi in the Fire Nation or the Earth Nation? I don't know that Bumi is really that old. He is in the Avatar world. It seems as if living to be 98 or however old isn't an odd thing in this universe. So why is Bumi the only character that we see? Like, why didn't he have someone greeting him?
Other friends. Yeah. I don't know.
It'd be a great moment to bring them in, to be like, oh, well, I'm going to usher you in here, and as opposed to this random sage. He could have been Aang's friend as a kid. That would have been more believable.
I mean, we did just have the Bumi episode. Side note, I've always been curious as to how this, like, street kid, like, Bumi, became the king of the entire city. But anyway. I don't know.
He was Aladdin. That's how, Natalie.
Okay, fine. That's fine. All right. That's a fine answer. We'll just go with that, shall we? the fire sages, they do manage to sneak in, basically, by opening the crazy door thing and distracting them with Momo. But Avatar Aang gets to speak to Avatar Roku in spirit form for the first time. So what did you think of actually getting to see a past life? Like, Ariana, I'm especially curious, like, what's your impression of the Avatar cycle and what the Avatar actually is at this point?
Well, I think I mentioned it in the other one I was on, but I think it's so cool. It reminds me of the Dalai Lama kind of thing where, you know, they become another person when they die, but they're still, like, the same spirit, kind of. I don't really understand it, but it seems really cool, which is why I was actually surprised that he was able to talk to Avatar Roku at all, because I would think that he would be inside him, but maybe that's part of it. Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
I mean,
well, Ariana brings up an interesting point, doesn't she, Natalie, that Roku should be more accessible than he was. It's a lot more difficult, it seems, for Aang to capture the past personalities than it was maybe for Korra. I don't know if that's necessarily true throughout Atla, though, because it's not, I wouldn't call this exactly spoilery, but more of just kind of like that moment seems retconned, because there are many moments where Aang is kind of just like, all right, gonna go talk to my past selves, and he just meditates for a bit and is able to
do it. He hadn't done it at all at this point. I'm assuming it's a skill that he needs to tap into. And he didn't necessarily have to go all through those bells and whistles to, you know, be at the island at the right moment if, you know, for that kind of thing, if he was experienced at entering the spirit world at will, but he's not at all at the moment. So it may just be something that, rather than a retcon, it may just be that he kind of learns more, basically, about that.
Well, there's a lot of time that we don't see as we travel along. Even now, like, we've missed out on, I'm sure, some adventures that have been written about in side internet comics or free Dark Horse comic things. Like, you know, that there's gonna be little filler pieces that we're gonna pick up every once in a while that are, I think they're important. I think they're noticed. I don't think that they were cut out without a lot of painstaking effort.
Yeah. And so, I mean, the main thing that we get out of this, besides from sort of meeting Roku, who's the Avatar before Aang, and he's the Avatar that died, you know, not long before Aang was born, obviously, so that would have been like 110 years ago or whatever. He tells Aang that there is basically now a mission, an end point for the summer, end of summer, big comet, Fire Lord's going to burn down the world, Aang has to stop him. What did that make you think? Like, did you think that this was kind of the end game for this season or the whole show? Or what are you expecting from this Fire Lord showdown at the moment, Ariana?
Oh, well, I guess I was thinking it was the end of the season, but now that I think about it, it's probably the end of the series because he has to master all three elements. And from what I understand, each season is an element. So, dang, that's, like, super intense that they have to go through all this stuff in, like, a summer.
I would say that would be a good guess, Ariana. It was interesting to hear and you know, Aang is kind of like, how am I going to do this? I don't know how to do this at all. And Roku tells him, you know, I know that you can do it, Aang, because you've done it before. And so what did any thoughts about that one? Mitch, do you remember what they were referring to there, or Ariana, in terms of what the Avatar might have done before to kind of save the world?
I remember, so it's pointless for me to say. I remember that part around.
I hadn't thought of it as a specific incident. I just assumed, like, oh, you've done this hundreds of times. You know how to do fire stuff and water stuff.
Yeah.
So that's cool if he saved the world before.
Yeah. It would be nice to be like the chill avatar where nothing happens in the lifetime except you get to just use, you know, like a little bit of power from each place and just like, you know, no big world wars, all good, you know, that's fine. But yeah, I mean, I think obviously that the Fire Nation's takeover of the world is a sign, is something that we're meant to believe wouldn't have happened if the Avatar had been there, because everyone's just meant to obey the Avatar, basically. The Avatar is, because they're so in touch with the spirit world and, like, they know what's right and stuff like that, apparently, they're just meant to be, like, if the Avatar says chill, everyone has to chill, basically. So, I don't know.
I get it. So he's, like, the Pope for
I guess so, yeah. Which is a lot to put on someone, I suppose, and you'd hope they wouldn't be a douchebag, if you know what I mean. I don't think it's intrinsically in the Avatar to be a douchebag, but we definitely see some Avatars, you know, that are a bit more bloodthirsty than others, or a bit more aggressive, you know.
Oh my gosh, how cool! If there's like an evil Avatar, I kind of want to see that show.
An evil Avatar? What is she talking about, Natalie?
God, who'd know? No. Anyway, we'll move on to our favorite moments from this show, favorite scenes. So, Ariana, what was yours?
Mine was when Avatar Roku just totally bamps out and he, like, destroys everybody and it's like, yep, don't mess with the Avatar, bitches. So that was my favorite.
Mm. I mean, what did you think about, like, him coming out, like, his spirit, like, appearing as Roku, if you know what I mean, and not, and then Aang kind of shrinks back down to himself?
I don't know. I hadn't thought of it. It's cool.
I find it quite confusing, honestly. But yeah. Mitch, how about you for favorite scenes in this?
Mine was when Zuko was allowed through the blockade. It was a really interesting strategic moment in this chess game between Zhao and Iroh. Because Zuko's kind of just like the pawn who's jumping around everywhere, when Iroh's the one that's behind the scenes the whole time, figuring out how everything's happening. Mm. So it's like, you know, the queen or the king of Iroh was telling Zuko what was happening so that he would decide in a certain way what to do. Like, you know, he was like, he let you through because it was all a way for him to be led to the Avatar.
Yeah.
And it's just really cool that Iroh was able to see through those things, and Zuko's just kind of like, whatever, I don't care, keep on going, the engines are failing. And Iroh's sitting back and having those really nice pensive moments. I really, really appreciate that Yoda-ism of him. It is a lot more Yoda than Dumbledore, if you think of that moment specifically, especially if you've watched the Clone Wars TV series on Cartoon Network, if anyone has.
I have not, Mitch.
Oh, it's a lot better than you would think. It's not of the caliber of the original series, but it's definitely not as bad as the U3. Yeah, and that's a lot like Yoda in that show when he's trying to command an army or something. Mm. He thinks about why an enemy let them slip through and always doesn't take anything for granted like that, too.
Yeah, I think I like Iroh a lot better than Dumbledore. I mean, that's saying a lot, you know, given everything you know about Harry Potter and then how little people might know about Atlas so far. But Iroh, if I had to, like, put them down on a piece of paper, I think I like Iroh better than I like Dumbledore. So, yeah. My favorite moment, I mean, I liked the trick with Momo when they open. I just like the comic timing in this show sometimes. It's really, they nail it for a cartoon. Like, it's the kind of, you wouldn't think that, like, delivery and timing could be that effective in a cartoon, but it is. It's so good. I also liked that one fire sage that was not evil, but he was a bit of a wimp to, like, not stand up for what he believed in when, you know, that, you know, temple is meant to be, you know, pro Avatar and not pro
what do you mean when was he a wimp though?
Just that he
because he rescued he rescued Aang.
He did, but just that he didn't, I don't know, like I guess he didn't really have anything to gain or lose before the Avatar showed up, but I don't know, I would have, if he'd known that all of the others were going to be anti-Avatar, like if he'd known how the system was changing, I would have put my hand up and been like, guys, this isn't what we're meant to be doing, if you know what I mean, like prior to that. But that's fine. He did good, and that's nice. I'm glad he was there to save the day. That's fine. How about favorite actual quotes? Ariana, what was yours?
I loved it when after Appa has to go and, like, fly for 10,000 miles Aang is like, Appa, are you okay? And he just answers with like this Chewbacca noise. He's just like, so that was endearing.
Poor Appa. That was just a lot to have to do. And everyone's just like, are you going yet? Come on. I'm like, hurry up. He's like,
oh, I know, hurry up. Bye. And he's like,
Appa makes me so sad sometimes.
He does a lot of hard work for the gang.
I love how he has the same face for everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he can definitely emote if he wanted to, like smile or frown or be angry. But he kind of just like, meh, saving the world.
Mitch, how about you with your quote for this week?
All right, so mine was this really epic moment when the Avatar Roku is talking to Aang and the Firebenders are readying their attack for him to come out, and Roku has just like this really chilling line. It sounds a lot more hokey out of context, but it was great with the music. A great danger awaits you at the temple. I can help you face that threat, but only if you're ready. And I was like, oh, go get him, Aang. Yeah.
Yeah.
So excited for that moment.
Well, yeah. True. I did really like that line that Roku said to Aang as well, that I know you can do it because you've done it before. But I've also got to give a shout out to Sokka at the beginning of the episode. You know, when Aang's like, I was talking to Appa, and Sokka says, well, I was talking to Momo. Because I don't know why. It just makes me laugh every time for some reason. Okay, so I think that we're about wrapped up with those two episodes for this week. Does anyone have any particular further thoughts, like, you know, talking points they wanted to bring up or just things they wanted to mention about the two episodes we've just watched, or any questions they wanted to raise for the future? This is mainly directed at Ariana in case she's got any big questions, but Mitch as well?
Okay, mine's pretty quick. It's just saying that I'm already tired of seeing that comet rushing scene, because you see that, you see that a lot. And it's really obnoxious because it's so loud, it like doesn't mix well ever.
The Sozin's comment.
Yeah, the little flashback. And I know it's supposed to be jarring, but it's a little bit too much for me.
I just like that this has a comet too. It's very like Game of Thrones. The comet is coming, and so I'm excited. Aang's the prince that was promised, so.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I mean, I suppose that there's a lot of comets, you know, throughout history, you know, in worlds that don't really have a lot of, great science and stuff like that. Though I do love how Atla uses science all of the time, like that science exists in their world, basically, which is nice. And we saw a little bit of that in this episode. But yeah, the people that don't have, you know, a lot of technological developments, comets were always played a big part, and people always made a big song and dance about them. So, yeah, that should be interesting. So we have an end game now for at least part of the plot, which is Sothan's comet's coming, and we've got to defeat the Fire Lord. Ariana, at this point, do you think that that means kill him? Like, do you think Aang will kill the Fire Lord?
I don't think so, number one, because this is a cartoon, and number two, because Aang seems to, like, he keeps saying how he has to respect all life and stuff like that. So I don't know if that would qualify unless there's no other choice, but I don't think so.
Cool. Well, we shall see. All right. So we'll say bye to you for now, and then another gang of people will be back next week for the next two episodes, episodes 9 and 10. I've got a feeling episode 9 is one of my favorites, so I'll be sad to miss that one, but I can't quite remember where we're up to. I'll have to have a look at the episode list. So hopefully everyone enjoys that, and we will catch you next time with Rewatchable. So bye bye to everyone.
Yeah, take care, guys.
Bye.